When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Over the next hour, we're going to get some inspiration from a gentleman who was a bona fide star of the game, a number one draft pick, All-Australian, fairest and best, grand final player, and certainly was one of the best at his craft. And he has had a wonderful journey, and he's still involved in football post-career, playing career, and also loves his golf. And I talk of Jeff White, who now resides on the Gold Coast of all places. White, I appreciate your time. Look forward to spending the next hour with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on board, Gossie. I'm looking forward to this.
Let's go all the way back to a young boy. Now, you love your golf, and we know that you're taken number one in a draft pick. I want to go back to the little Jeff White. What sort of sport did Jeff White play and love as a kid growing up?
I was a basketball fan, so I love my NBA. I love Michael Jordan, so I'll go on the line of many people who admired him. But my dad, so true story, my dad was working for Pepsi at the time. He had a conference that was in Chicago in 87, so I was only 10 years of age. Went over there, came back and said, brought back a Bulls 23 and said, this guy's pretty big. He's everywhere in Chicago. I think you should follow him. And that's what the journey started for me. I loved my basketball. I played a lot of basketball. Footy was actually just a hobby. And so I was playing state basketball, playing school basketball. My dad was the coach. So I'd play on a Sunday, footy, muddy, change in the car, head to basketball, play school basketball Sunday night. And then rep basketball was Friday, trained every night. So it was pretty intense. Played a bit of tennis. My dad liked tennis, so I would often go and play a bit of tennis. But they were the sort of three sports I sort of hung around, I guess, a little bit. And, really was just entrenched in the basketball arena. And back then, no social media. The only thing I had to wait for was 10 o'clock ABC on a Friday night to see the game of the week and hope that was a Bulls game. So that was my week.
So I'm going to take you there. You've touched on the Michael Jordan, and then I'm going to spin you right forward because the story has it that you have a remarkable friendship with Michael Jordan from wearing that number 23 and from being a Bulls fan and from being a very talented junior rep basketballer as well. And you won a NBA, you won $25,000 on the golf course with Michael Jordan. True, false? Just, okay, forget about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the name. Michael Jordan, NBA great, golf, 25 grand. Put all those pieces together in the puzzle.
Yes, true story. So I was fortunate enough to go over. I'm good friends with Adam Scott, and I had the opportunity. I'd never seen him play. I've been friends with him since 2001. I'd never seen him play golf in America. So the opportunity came about in 2011. I was waiting for him to make the top 75 for the BMW Championship, which was in Chicago. And we've got a buddy of ours who's from Gold Coast who lives in Chicago, and didn't put two and two together. I wanted to go and see John Z. So I went over there. It was a work-related thing that I was doing at the time, but I obviously married that with seeing Scotty at the BMW. And we finished round one. We're in the car. We're driving back after his first round. And Scotty said to me, when are you flying back? I said, I'm flying back Sunday night. I've organised it with Joe, who is his travel agent at the time. And he said, well, you might not want to change that because we're playing golf with Michael Jordan on the Monday. And I froze. It was one of those moments where, you know, so we went out for dinner with John Z. It was organised through John Z. One of Michael Jordan's favourite golfers is Adam. So it was a really good synergy. He was still living in Chicago. So anyway, cut a long story short, there was six of us. John Z, Travis John Z's name is, Adam, myself, and then Michael came with two of his buddies, Billy and Billy. And they're both They're both professional golfers themselves. So both Billy and Billy really wanted to play with Adam. That was their idol. And, of course, I wanted to play with Jonzy and Michael, and we threw the balls up, as you do, as a six ball, and it went that way. So it was Travis, myself, and MJ, as they call him.
Oh, yeah,
and then there was Billy and Scotty. So going down the last hole, it was the funniest golf game I've ever played in my life. I had the highest handicap for six, and I hadn't played for a while because twins were born in January, so I hadn't played any golf. So they gave me the highest handicap of six, and the last hole was a rated six, and I knew I had a shot. And, yeah, without a word of a lie, I had a putt, I think it was about 15 foot, sunk the putt, won the hole, won the match, because they pressed us on the 17th. And Jordan came over, gave me the biggest chest pump you'd ever seen. He said, I not only inspire black guys, but I inspire white guys too. and that was his saying. And then a year later, I went back to Chicago. I was in the car with a buddy of Billy, one of the Billies. And I'd taken some photos of MJ's bag. And it was replicas of, you know, six championship rings. And it was just an awesome bag. And when I came back from that trip, I wrote a blog about it. And anyway, ESPN USA picked up, and he was filthy. MJ was not happy at all, wanting to know who actually got those photos. And I wasn't privy to this, of course. So when I was there a year later, Billy told me the story about how MJ was a bit upset about this. And anyway, I said to Bill, can you show me those photos? And I said, they're mine. I wrote a blog about that. He said, you're kidding me. I said, no, dead serious. He rang MJ in the car on the speaker. And so I'm frozen. I'm going to be in trouble here.
Yep.
And Billy said to MJ, yeah, you know those photos last year? Yeah, I was, you know, just swearing and cursing. He goes, I know who took them. He goes, who was that? He goes, oh, Aussie Whitey. And then there was a pause. I'm like, uh-oh, here we go. And MJ goes, hey, Whitey, you and I are one and zip, and you won me 25 grand. Thanks, mate, and hung up. So, well, I pieced it together. So I said, Billy, how did that happen? And he said, well, you know, the group in front of us, that we had there was a four ball in front of us. They kept on coming back asking questions. How'd you go? How'd you go? Keeping score. That was the group he was having a bet with. So he wasn't having a bet with us.
Gotcha.
He was having a bet with them.
Gotcha.
And and that putt made him 25 grand. So after that, they went back and, true story, went back and they watched videos of me playing AFL back at their house. So it was pretty cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Have you touched, dare I say it, can we go into your teletext? Do you still contact Michael Jordan? Do you still have the odd text?
Yeah, so still be in contact. I haven't heard from him for a little while, but he was meant to come to the President's Cup later that year, but because of the NBA lockout, it didn't happen. So Jonzy ended up giving him my number. And when I returned after that trip, I got a text from him saying that I want to play golf, I want to go play Royal Melbourne, all that sort of stuff. So we had it all teed up. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But since then, I've been in contact. About 5 years ago, my twins got identical bulls set up with Jordans and the shirts and stuff like that. Anyway, so I sent him a text and he loved it. He goes, they're on the right track. So we've had some banter now and then, which has been really cool.
Absolutely brilliant. Jeff White is our guest, and one of the great stories of people you meet on the journey, inspiring sports stories, thanks to Baron today, because the little things are everything. So how much golf do you play? I know you remember Royal Melbourne. You remember Hunting Day?
No, I was at Royal Melbourne when I was playing golf, yep. When I was playing footy.
Yep.
I was actually working there. The AFL Players Association brought in it was called Off the Field, that you could do study and sure. So on and so forth. So I worked there for a while. I'm a member at Royal Pines up here on the Gold Coast.
Okay.
So I
play. How much golf do you play?
I just generally play. I don't play when I'm kid free. When I'm kid free, I play. So that'll be Thursday, Saturday. But when I have kids, I don't. The footy is pretty full on with my boys at the moment, which is really good, which is what I really love. And so I try and focus on that quite a lot. So now and then, Thursday morning maybe. I live on the golf course. So going out in the afternoons is in the buggy is pretty cool too. So I quite like that.
Look at you go, Hollywood. It all comes with being the number one draft pick. Hey, we're going to get a breakaway and come back, because we are going to then focus in on being the number one draft pick. And I'd be going to get your your view and how difficult it is for the current number one draft pick, Harley Reid, and the expectation and the expectation that comes with being a number one draft pick, because I do genuinely believe you set the tone in regards to that way back when in 1994. Let's take a break. Inspiring Sports Stories, Jeff White is our guest. As I mentioned, a number one draft pick, an All-Australian, a grand final player, a fairest and best, and one of the besties from one of the greatest, Michael Jordan. We'll come back and take a break because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Jeff White is our guest, Inspiring Sports Stories. So we've touched on the association on the golf course and his passion for the game, of course, and his mates that he plays golf with. But let's go back, all the way back to the number one draft pick in 1994. The first Dandenong Stingrays player to be drafted with the highest pick, of course. Wow, you played TAC in 93-94. You were taken number one by the Fremantle Football Club. Fremantle were granted by the AFL because of their first big season in the competition. Tell us a bit about being number one and the expectation at the time. Did you always believe you were going to go number one? And what about the lead up to being taken number one by Fremantle?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, looking back, I think the lead up sort of started, I reckon, halfway through 93. I wasn't expected to play Dandenong Stingrays as a 15-year-old, I think, 15, 16-year-old, but played some really good practice matches and got the selection. So the talk started then. And there was a pivotal moment, I think, for me, focusing on footy, was I played, as I mentioned before, played on the Sunday for Frankston Rovers, and we had a pretty good side and played really poor and jumped in the car, and because my dad was the coach of the school basketball side, so I was heading into basketball. And he said to me, "Oh, how'd you go?" And I said, "Oh, I didn't think I played that well." And he goes, "Well, good timing, because there was four or five AFL recruiters watching your game." And I went out and shot 32 points. And then after the game, my dad turned around to me and said, "I know what sport you want to play." Because it was at a time where I needed to make a decision. And that it was. So I basically hung up the basketball boots, the Air Jordans, from basketball and started focusing on footy. So that was a turning point for me. And then, there was talk about it. The start of 94, I had Glenger fever. So I think I missed the first five rounds. Mm-hmm. So I had to go through a few things with battling that. Caught me off centre and stuff like that. But at no stage did I ever put any pressure on myself. And I think looking at what Harley Reid's going through, I don't sense that one bit. I don't sense that he's putting any pressure on himself. And, you know, I really honed into not only my family and friends, but when I was first drafted, the Freo, I really just wanted to earn the respect from the players. Had some one, like Winston Abraham, Scott Chisholm, Scotty Waters, who I've actually reconnected with. His son plays with my son in the Gold Coast Suns Academy here, which is really, really cool. Benny Allen, Peter Mann, such wonderful people. And I just really wanted to earn their respect. That was my main focus. So really blocked out all the external noises that were happening. And it's different now. I get it for Harley Reid in relation to social media and all. There was nothing like that back in my time. Mm. But I really just really narrowed the focus on trying to improve myself, even little things like at East Perth. Really loved my time at the Royals and the guys that were there. There was the guys like Scott Loving and David Swan, and really just try to earn their respect. And I really think that channeled my focus and really blocked out the external noises of me being the number one. And, yeah, of course, deep down you want to prove yourself and show. But it's also a personal thing. I wanted to fly for my marks. You know, I wanted to jump into boats at the centre bounce. I wanted to have that flair, you know. So I was always trying to work on that craft. Percy Johnson was a big influence in that area. So, so going with the draft, Cameron Swab was appointed the recruiting manager, and they told me 8 weeks before the draft. They gave him a verbal call, and so we went to the draft combine, and I was rooming with Jason Ekamanis, and he was already going to Brisbane Lions, and not that I knew that at the time, but I was obviously going to Freo. So we had it's funny at the draft camp, you have an area where you sit down and all the AFL coaches and recruiters come and talk to you, and both Jason and I had no one. So we obviously knew where we were going.
Word was out that you were...
Word was out, yeah. So and I remember Kevin Sheedy walking up and going, nah, I don't need to speak to you. It was quite funny.
What was that like, though? A young man, close to your family, and you'd said you'd been sick, of course, prior to that, of course, with the glandular fever. But you have to up stumps and come to WA. Tell us a bit about that move. When you first came to join Fremantle, where did you stay? Who did you stay with? Did the family, what was the connection with your family in regards to coming to and from? And how difficult was it for a young teenager?
I was excited. I had cousins living there, lived in Kareen. So they had a beautiful property up in Kareen. I was straight in there. They loved it. I'd only met them a couple of times when I was young. So it was on my dad's side. It was my dad's mum, her sister. So and they still live there to this day. So they all live there. And I'd met them when I was young, so obviously didn't know them. And then, as soon as I was told that I was going to be drafted, I guess the logistics was started that way. We started talking to them and they had to be pretty quiet about it because, look, it wasn't out of the bag yet, but they needed to be really quiet, the fact that I was going to be number one draft pick. But we just needed to do some groundwork and figure out where I was going to stay and all that sort of stuff. So for me, it was really exciting. I love surfing. Back then I was a boogie boarder. Now I was an esky lid rider, but now I'm a stand-up guy now. But it was so far for me to travel to surf when I was young. And that really helped with my spring because I was a boogie boarder. I loved the paddling, stuff like that. So living in Kareen, I would have the boogie board in the back of my car, drive down to training at Freo on the way back, I'd stop in at Scarborough and have a surf. It was great. Loved it.
Yeah, that was a fair bit of Fremantle, I think. There was others who they had the surfing crew, or you had the visiting crew. I remember being down at Fremantle. It might not have been exactly that time, but I remember when you'd run across at Fremantle Oval on the concrete and there were blokes without shoes on and come from the beach, Jesse Sinclair, Brody Holland, Heath Black.
Quinton Leachy,
the great man, of course, bless his soul. Just in regards to the Fremantle resources. I mean, you didn't know any better. You've just come through junior footy, you've come through TAC Cup, of course, and then you go to an AFL club and now you see the resources available to everyone. You've got a young boy at the Academy at the Gold Coast as well, and you see the resources. What was it like at Fremantle? Did you understand that they were a new club and they weren't flush with resources, probably like the West Coast Eagles up the road?
Yeah, definitely. But I didn't really take too much note of it. Even when I went to Melbourne, we worked out at Junction Oval, and that was even worse than what I had at Freo.
It was.
So you sort of adapt to the surroundings. We really love training at South Freo. Love the Bicton Pool.
Yes.
We spent a lot of time
there. Yes. Jared Neesham, the old water polo stomping ground.
Thank God I was a good swimmer because that's a hard sport. That is a hard sport. But that was good for our recovery. When we first started, we did weights at their gym. So it was almost like a satellite sort of thing. We spent a lot of time at a big school. Can't remember the name of the school at the moment. But
Aquinas? Did you go to Aquinas College?
Might have been Aquinas, yes. Yeah. Correct, that's the one. Yeah. And I think it was 95, maybe 96. 95 was my first year. 96, we started the sort of full-time sort of – that's when it sort of started.
Mm.
And that was at Aquinas. So we'd get there at 7 in the morning and wouldn't leave till 4 in the afternoon, which obviously the players do these days. But, yeah, we just adapted. We adapted the facilities that we had and there was no complaints. We got along with the job and did as best we could. But, the facilities that I have these days are amazing. And I think it's certainly that's what you need. You know, you're there, it's a working environment. You know, you've got to have the best facilities And if you don't, you're going to really lose ground on their opposition teams in the competition.
Jeff White, our guest, Inspiring Sports Stories, thanks to Bauer and O'Day because the little things are everything. Now, Whitey, you played 30-odd games, kicked 18 goals, 3 years at Fremantle. Did you what stage of your career did you wear the big pads, the big the thigh protectors? Did you start with those?
I had them when I was 15. My dad, his working environment was in Moorabbin. And I got a big cork. I'm going to say it was against Luke Darcy when he was playing against the Eastern Rangers. A massive cork in my quad. Probably the only way they could stop me was jumping in the centre bounce if I want to add a title to that. But
you're ahead of your time. You're ahead of your time. I mean, I know Jim Steins, I think, eventually wore them as well, and a couple of other ruckmen. But you're ahead of your time at that time. They were protective. The undershort is a common thing, of course, that we see now. The skins, but you actually were ahead of your time as a young man.
Yeah, well, Dad discovered a lady who did all the sewing for gymnastics and stuff like that. And so Dad got a pair of the skins and they actually got an insert. So it was dead foam rubber.
Yep.
And I had to change the foam rubber quite a bit because they had stud holes in them. And that layer, I didn't get a cork on my quad for the rest of my career. And so it started when I was 15 and Matty Lloyd wore them as well.
Yes.
Matty Lloyd wore them. Yes. And he reached out to me and said, "Hey, I need those pads." And I said, "Here they are." And they saved me because, you know, when you're going in the ruck at the centre bounce, you know, you're not only negating knees but also boots and everything that comes with that. And so they were very effective for my career and obviously shin pads as well.
May I ask, in the 3 years that you were at Fremantle, when did it come to your mind and your manager, family, whoever it may be at the time, that you wanted to leave?
End of 97. So the start of 97, the discussion started with Freo. I was happy at the time. And so Freo decided that, okay, yep, we, and my mum and dad were really excited, my brothers as well, about the fact of moving over. So yeah, look, not to put a damper on it, but Freo had an opportunity to obviously sign the deal halfway through 97. They had my parents were brought over, and my whole family was brought over, and there was no urgency. No disrespect to Freo right now, no disrespect to Freo back then, but you know, you're trying to win someone's contract, and my mum and dad felt there was no talking to schools, there was no discussions with real estate agents. So it felt a bit lackluster in that area. And look, I'm saying it's no disrespect, but whereas the urgency from the clubs in Melbourne was different, totally different. And I think the other sort of part about that is Cameron Swab ended up leaving and he became the recruiting manager for Melbourne. So he was the one that recruited me to Freo. Neil Danaher was the assistant coach at Freo. And my Stingrays coach was Greg Hutchinson, who was the assistant coach at Melbourne. Yep. Even though they won four games the previous year, everything sort of fell into line. And the decision was only made at the end of the year. And with Neil Danaher being appointed coach and then Greg Hutchinson was appointed assistant coach, it just fell into line. Jim Steins, Gary Lyon was brilliant throughout the whole year in relation to touch points. When I arrived, Stephen Tingay and Stephen Phoebe took me under their wings. David Swartz was fantastic. And then a year later, I ended up moving in with David Neat. So the whole feeling for that was just really professional. And, made the decision. And my pop, he had passed away 18 months earlier. He was a Mad Demon supporter. So it was almost tick, tick, tick.
We're going to take a break and come back. We're going to talk about the Melbourne career, and you talked about Jim Steins and some of the greats you played with. You played state football for the Big V as well, not long after arriving back in Melbourne. Jeff White is our guest. This is Inspiring Stories, thanks to Bower and O'Day, because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything.
Goes long again. That's a beautiful kick. Up towards Uze. White is there also. The big man keeps it in. Bends it round the body. This will be a miracle goal.
He's kicked it.
Oh, don't tell me. That is a team lifter if anyone is one.
Ah, brilliant stuff. Great call, Sandy Roberts. That was against Collingwood in Round 8, 1998, one of the highlights for Jeff White, our guest, thanks to Bower and O'Day, Inspiring Sports Stories. Do you get reminded of that goal? Because I reckon I just saw your eyes light up. I think you knew that was coming.
Yeah, I knew which one it was. Yeah, my sons play that a fair bit. Thanks to YouTube, they love it. So when I hear upstairs, I know exactly what they're playing.
Brilliant stuff. Hey, your time at Melbourne. Now, okay, I'm going to get you to either confirm or deny. So we've had the Michael Jordan stories confirmed. Did you get a boat?
No.
Did Dad get a boat?
He brought that up the other week. I went over and saw him. He lives here in Brisbane now. Lives in an island called Russell Island. And he brought it up out of the blue. He goes, I still can't believe they said that about a boat. I got nothing.
That was one of the great stories of that time, that the clincher was a boat for your old man.
No. There was nothing. No clincher at all. It was, you know what he said? He actually brought it up out of the blue. It's quite funny you say that. He brought it up a couple of weeks ago and he goes, but you know what? I wish I got that boat. He loves his fishing.
I bet he does. Hey, mate, you got a chance to play with Jim Steins, the late, great Jim Steins. What a superstar. In that time, it was only one season you played together, of course, and we'll talk of 1998. What was that like? What did you get out of that?
A magical man, beautiful man. Just he was the modern day ruck. So I really looked up to him coming through. He won the Brownlow 91. Just thought that the Scott Wines, the Damien Moncurse, the Sean Wren, they would hang back at the kick behind the ball, and I loved doing that. But they generally didn't get involved in the play, whereas Jim Steins would go around and get his 20, 30 possessions.
Yeah.
I thought I used that as a strength. And so I really closely watched him, and then to actually play alongside him. It was our last game. It was my last ever game for Freo 97 at the G. We played Melbourne, and that was their fourth win of the year. And I ended up playing ruck and played against him, and he just was hitting me, blah, blah, blah. And there was obviously talk that I was thinking maybe of going to Melbourne. So he made it a big challenge for me. But when I first stepped into the club at the end of 97 for my first time at Melbourne, he just wrapped me around his arms and he said, I was just trying to test you. He said to me, I was just trying to test you, in his Irish accent in that game. But one of the most people, he was my ruck coach in 2000. And I'll never forget this. And someone actually mentioned it just recently, which was quite beautiful to hear and remind me of this. Playing against Carlton, first final. And they'd obviously had a great year. So the two standout clubs were Carlton and Essendon that year, and we played at Carlton in the first final, playing against a guy called Porter, and he just dominated me in the first quarter. Just four contested marks, dominated me in the centre bounce. And Jim Steins, this is all he said to me as the ruck coach, came up and said to me, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, you'll get him, and just walked away. And I just went, oh. Like, it was just one of those pivotal moments that really, I get chills, thinking about, that really put me present to think that, hang on a minute, yes, There's moments where players are going to get your opposition's going to get a run on, your direct opponent's going to get a run on. But, okay, you throw in that, I can still throw it as well, And we end up winning that game, and I finished off the game pretty strong. And there was just always, the coffee moments that we had, that's when behind the goal vision started to come. So we'd sit down with Jim and you'd say, no, run this way. This is you running your 45 and you're stuck in this position and you've got to come back and work really. And I see it with Max Gawn. He did a lot of work with Max Gawn. So you'll notice with Max Gawn today, he'll run really hard to his position. He rests. If it's down the line, he'll work really hard. Mm. He'll rest. And then he goes to the contest. He doesn't just dribble. He works hard. And that's all the Jim Steins sort of stuff, And, it was great.
Mark Porter. It was Carlton and then North Melbourne or the other one?
Yes, that's the one, Mark Porter, yeah.
Big unit. Hey, mate, that was a good year for you, your debut year in Melbourne. You played every game, you got 11 Brownlow votes, and you got selected to play for Victoria. Can you believe it that in your fourth year of AFL football, you were putting on the big V? Wow, what was that like?
Hey, it was a big dream of mine, and, it was Matty Knight. So he was my roommate. We played the Allies in Brisbane, and we had it, and Lee Matthews was the coach. So I really wanted to play with Robert Harvey. He was my idol growing up. I was a Saints supporter, and he pulled out. We had training, and he pulled out during the week. I was shattered, but there was a great team. Matty Lloyd, I think, played. I played juniors with Matty, and I know him quite well. So it was really cool to play in the big V, because we had shared some really good moments at junior level, so it was good to play with him. But we had a team meeting beforehand, and Lee Matthews said that Peter Everett was going to start in the ruck and I would start on the bench. And I really wanted 34, but David King was playing and he was 34, so he got it ahead of me. So
yeah, good luck getting anything off King.
So I ended up getting 31, which is Corey McKernan's number. But
why 34? You wore 34 throughout your whole career, apart from that state game. But you wore 34. What was the 34?
Well, the 34 came when I first came to Freo. We had to, or every player had to nominate three numbers that they wanted to wear. I don't know if you knew this.
No.
So you had to nominate three numbers. So I nominated 15, which is my junior number.
Winnie Abraham.
Winnie Abraham. Number 9, Gary Durkee ended up getting
Dirks.
It. And that was my birth date. And then 23, I think it was Delaney, got 23 maybe. I'm not 100% sure on 23.
T-Bone.
T-Bone. And anyway, so I remember getting a phone call from the Fremantle office saying, hey, Jeff, I'm just letting you know that the three numbers that you put in have all been taken. Do you have another number? I'm like, oh. And I remember looking at my birth certificate, and the first house I ever lived in was number 34. So I said to the lady, I said, it was 34 available. And she said, yes, it is. I said, all right, I'll have that.
And it stuck.
That's how it came about. And stuck, yeah. And then big Dean Irving was number 34 at Melbourne.
He was.
And he retired in 97. So
he lived with me in Melbourne. I was living in Melbourne at the time when the big mutt came over and played. So 23 at Fremantle. We'll find out who 23 is before it.
He might have been another T-Bone, but I can't remember who got the 23.
We'll find out.
But we had to nominate. We had to nominate our numbers, and the number one draft pick didn't get a preference.
It was very true. Well, we see now with the Harley Reid, of course. I think they used the lure of number 9, which was a great number for the West Coast and plenty successful over the journey. So it was a great year for you. Was it as good a year as, or did you pinch yourself on how good a year, the amount of footy you played, the adulation you got, the rewards you got through your Brownlow votes in double digits and then playing state football? Sum up that year of Melbourne.
It was a great, it was a wonderful year. It was very exciting. Just a thrill, you know, just a thrill of playing AFL. And that was my dream, of course, that I'd already had a taste of that with Freo, but to play at the G, you know, to play in front of big crowds and, you know, we ended up making the finals. And I think to this day, I still believe that that was our best year to win the flag. It was the old system, the old eight. We played Adelaide Crows, ended up winning the flag, but we played them in the first final and beat it by 60 points at the MCG. We faced North Melbourne, we beat them, and they were they just come off a grand final appearance in 97. We beat them by 50. And then as the system worked, we ended up playing North Melbourne, who finished on top in the prelim and got done by 3 goals, I think it was. So the whole year was electric. You know, they come off winning 4 games the previous year. They had new coach, new game style. You know, we had Jamie Shanahan come back. Gary Lyon was fit and going. Play with Todd Viney, who was a beast in the middle, exactly like his son. Had the opportunity to play with Jim Sines. It was just an incredible year, good fun. I think I finished 4th in the best and fairest. Todd Viney won the best and fairest. So it was just everything just rolled into place. It was really exactly what I sort of, I guess you have envisions of something working that way when you decide to go to a new club, but it overseeded that sort of expectation.
It certainly did. It was a great year, 1998. Jeff White is our guest, and our researcher has come up. Shane Parker wore number 23.
Parks. Yes. He's still the record holder. Is he still? Pavlich.
Parks had it from 95 to 2007. And number
jumper. Lovely man, Parks.
He wore jumper 20.
I'll say hello to him.
Yeah, he wore jumper number 23, and he spoke no more than 23 words in his entire time at Fremantle. He didn't get a lot out of Parks. Hey, 2000, you talk about the transition of that football club, of course. Wasn't a great year, 1999, but let's go to 2000. You're playing a grand final. You had a great grand final. Personally, many believe you were the best player for Melbourne on that day, but you got pantsed by Essendon. You're only in your 6th year of AFL football and you're playing in a grand final with a team on the rebuild that Melbourne was, but you got a bit of a touch-up. But that whole grand final experience, is it one of the most special?
Yeah, it was. It was my 100th game as well, my 100th AFL game. So I had a little spot up on the corner.
On the banner.
On of the banner.
Did you run through first? No chance.
Nita would steal. Yeah, he had full way in preference on that.
Where were you in the photo when you ran out and you had to go to the bench seat and you had to go? Where did you stand in the photo? Back row. Sure.
I don't know. I've never actually. You know what? I've never seen that photo.
You can't recall whether you ran out and sat on the team.
I don't think we did. I think we might have, but. You know, the whole build up. I think the whole week was amazing.
Yeah.
I remember Shannon Grant was a good friend of mine, and we played North Melbourne the prelim. We won them. He came over to me, he said, "White, it's your turn," and I never forget that. And then we walked out, and the line, because we played on a Friday night, was right up to the Hilton. You know, the Hilton, the hotel
to get tickets
there,
for the GF.
Those
are the days.
And I was living with David Neitz and Jeff Farmer, so I was a pretty cool crew under the one roof. But we went out for dinner on the Tuesday night, and we went to a restaurant. We were right at the back, and we're just there by ourselves, and we get a bottle of wine sent to our table. I'm like, and the waiter turns around and says, "It's from that gentleman over there." It was Sam Newman. Like, throwing stitches at us everywhere. But the whole week, you know, the training, the grand final parade, it was a magical time. And then when I rocked up, back in those days, you had to park outside, so everyone knew where your car was, and security wasn't like what it is today. I walked out, and I walked straight into my mum and dad, and they were both crying. I'm like, hang on a minute, I'm just about to go play the biggest game of my life, and you guys are crying. And I obviously very, very proud, but it was just a special moment, day. Yeah, and of course, not winning. You want to win. You know, D's hadn't won a flag in so many years, and we tried our best, but Essendon's just too good on the day.
I want to take you to where your career took a bit of a strange turn when you copped a whack in the face. I want you, and if anyone listening to the podcast right now is sitting and has a bit of a queasy stomach, Jeff's going to explain the full extent of the injuries. Have a listen.
So the margin, 45 points. Cats by 19 at quarter time, 37 at half time. That is very ugly. Let's hope he's okay, because he almost caught the full force of the Stephen King boot there. Oh,
Chris, we're sitting 100 metres away from that, and we can hear the sound that that boot made on Jeff Walsh.
2005, Michael Christian commentating. I think that was Andy Marr doing the bench work right there. Stephen King, at the time, tell us the thought, the pain. Do you recall it?
I just remember laying on the ground, and I got up, and I saw the blood. Don't want to turn your podcast or the listeners away, but doctor came over and said, "Stay still." And all I said to him, and he still talks about this day, I said, "What the F was that?" That's all I said. And he said, stay still. Wasn't concussed. It hit me flush right in the top upper lip underneath my nose. So very, very, very lucky that it wasn't the side of the head, or I didn't break my jaw. Most painful part about that, the adrenaline's rushing. When you see players, the adrenaline's rushing is, you know, you're involved in the game where there's a blood. Yeah, you feel some pain. You're in a little bit of shock, but the pain's not there. The ambulance didn't have their... So they had to take the ambulance from over to Epworth. Cabrini, sorry, from MCG to Cabrini. We had to go over the tram lines. The suspension was not fixed. So that was the most painful ride I've ever had in my life.
Didn't have the green whistle, Whitey?
No, didn't have it back those days.
Oh, no green whistle.
So, yeah, to all your listeners, and I promote this quite heavily, the surgeon said if I didn't have my mouth cut in, I would have had to have false teeth, my top upper lip. Had my mouth cut in, had the perfect mold, my teeth were still there, still holding in place, all thanks to my mouth guard. So I have 14 plates and 5 screws in my upper lip. So
still?
Still. And it doesn't go off when I go through the airports.
Ouch. How many games did you miss?
None. It was the last game. There was the final.
Of course. It was the final. Of course.
Yeah, so my pre-season was modified up until probably a month before we started playing practice matches. So
eating through a straw for a while, were you, mate?
Well, I was getting married in 5 weeks. So it was, I ended up growing a beard, which I'd never done in my life, because I couldn't shave. I couldn't feel it.
Oh.
Yeah. So, my wife at the time, she wasn't happy with that. She was a bit, well, she was happy, but she was obviously happy for my health, but she was very nervous about the fact that if we're going to have photos, that how my face looked. I ended up looking okay, Gossie.
I'm sure you did, Jeffrey.
It was quite strange, the fact that I couldn't feel it for quite some time.
All righty, let's take our final break and come back and just sum up your time in the AFL of career of Jeff White. And what are you doing now? I know you love your golf. You're on the Gold Coast. You got a young boy coming through the paces as well. Some exciting times ahead. Inspiring sports stories. Jeff White is our guest, superstar in his time. Thanks to Barron O'Day, because the little things are everything.
This is Inspiring Sports Stories with Tim Gossage on SEN. Thanks to Bowra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.
Jeff White, 268 games. All Australian, number one draft pick. Big V player. Fairest and best. Oh, it's a pretty good resume. You're pretty happy with what you churned out over the journey?
Yes, I left no stone unturned. I worked extremely hard and loved every moment of it. And it's something that now comes to, I guess, light even more with the fact I've got three boys. I've got the 16-year-old son Kalani and identical twins Taj and Kai. And so they're very obviously proud of their dad, but it sort of highlights a little bit more the fact that their dad played and their dad's got footy cards still. So that's what they love.
Very cool. Hey, mate, what's First Use? Tell us a bit about this. This is the online coaching course that you've put together. And are you also doing some coaching over here in the WAFL?
I am, yes. I'm coaching the Perth Rucks. Got the Perth Demons. I've got the Rucks at the Perth Demons. So First Use, I absolutely love it. It's something I should have done years and years ago, but it's an online ruck coaching course. So you can download playbooks. You can do one-on-one. I've got an in-app that allows me to all junior levels, senior levels, men's, women's. They have them videoed these days. They're televised. They're through, you know, various forms of video technology. So I can download that, put it in an app. I can slow-mo. I can draw lines. I can show the rucks what they're doing. There's nothing ever been available. Nothing been available for rucks to do this. So I'm basically your one-on-one coach. Remotely, so I look after Geelong Grammar, look after Norwood Footy Club, look after Perth Footy Club. I look after the Gold Coast Suns women's side, I look after Broadbeach Cats. I have many junior, senior, men's, women's rucks that pay a subscription each month. So it's an online and also connection with me. First Use comes with giving midfielders First Use. That's where the word comes from. You've probably used it a lot during your time.
Yes.
And I'm really passionate and excited about it. I absolutely love it. I mean, I think the timing comes where, you know, last year when I was doing radio, they asked me a lot of content about, and they never, I've done radio now for a decade, and they never really honed into the craft of rucking. And I think it's become really prevalent with the 666. So the center bounce becomes really important. So a lot of questions were asked, and then they had ruck round, and then there was a lot of people that were asking about doing one-on-one coaching. So I wanted to try and find something that would provide a resource for people all around Australia. So that's what I've come with. You can download center bounce playbooks, stoppage playbooks, training, and that's all constantly going to be updated, of course. But really loving it, Gossie. It's going really, really well. The guys in Perth, Joshy Edwards is their ruck there. I did some video footage for him last night. So they can do their video footage at training, upload it. I get a notification. I can watch it slow-mo, give them instant feedback with a voiceover. So it's going really well. I'm excited about the product. And we only launched in December, so it's going well.
Well done. First Use, for anyone listening who needs some online coaching, of course, tailored to individuals aspiring to refine their skills, of course, as the ruck position within the sport of AFL. Don't help Perth too much, because we love Perth being hopeless over in the WAFL. Adrian Barrich is their chairman, president now, and we just love seeing Perth struggle. But anyway,
there's my motivation.
I knew I shouldn't have said that straight away. So life is good for you. On the Gold Coast, you love your golf, you're doing First Use, you're following your boys. There's plenty going on in Jeff White's world. Are you inspiring? Who are you trying to aspire? I know you got your app and your First Use and all that. What do you want to What's your legacy, do you think, in regards to your time in football?
Look, I think my best title is a father. That's my best title. That's what I really love. I spend so much time with my boys, and you know, and it's not all footy. It's you know, the boys, they you know, it's all about just making sure that they're beautiful boys, that they've got the manners. So that's my favourite title, is being a father. And then I guess secondly, it's you know, just really remaining present. I try to remain present as much as I can, not to get too far ahead of myself. Don't dwell on the past. So I'm really, really loving the opportunity I have to, you know, just giving back to the game that gave me so much in my life. So finding a resource in First Use has given me that opportunity. You know, I can see it. I can provide an inspiration for kids. I mean, the biggest thing for us would be I'm working with a kid who is out of Geelong Grammar. He's a big chance to be drafted this year. Now, my real focus and goal is to hopefully get someone drafted, you know, through the program of First Use. So first and foremost is my kids, family, and so on and so forth. But then, you know, hopefully the leaving a legacy of generating and hopefully inspiring kids to fulfill their dream of playing footy. There's no pressure on my kids to play. I know that my son, Kalani, who's 16, is a big chance to be drafted next year. But he took that path. I've already lived my dream. It's about me guiding him, and him understanding the you know what the responsibilities are that come with it.
150 legends, Melbourne 150 legends. You was named as one of those in their 150th anniversary celebration. You finished your career with the seventh highest number of appearances for Melbourne, 236. A life member of the Melbourne Football Club, a former number one draft pick, and I know people have fond memories of your early years at the Fremantle Dockers. Have appreciated your time on Inspiring Sports Stories, Jeff. Continued success, mate. And if you do see your dad or speaking to your dad, I'm sure we can find someone with a boat that can look after his passion and provide him. Someone at Melbourne who's still around, who promised the old man a boat, we can arrange, we can pull some strings and get a little tinny at least.
It sounds good. I'll pass it on, Cossie. Good on you, mate. And thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Good man. Jeff White joining us. What a superstar he was in his time and still doing great things in the footy space. Inspiring Sports Stories, thanks to Bower and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything.